You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, you know, I'm watching President Trump's recent press conference talking about the coronavirus, and he's got the heads of the Center for Disease Control and also the National Institute of Health with him. Phenomenal physicians, great medical teams with both agencies. He's got Mike Pence there, our vice president, who actually has experience in his own state when he was governor, dealing with a major medical issue before. The object or the job of the president of the United States, basically CEO of a major corporation, of which this is the medical staff of a medical, of a large corporation, he's sort of laying down a strategy, which is a strategy that's not been designed by President Trump, but in cooperation of everybody, right?
He delegates the work to the people that are most qualified in different areas.
And he's being very transparent. He invites the entire press there and brings his medical staff and his vice president with him. And he's simply running down, hey, here's what we know. Here's what we're doing. Here's where we're going. And here's how I want to put this strategy together in cooperation with all of the advice that I'm getting from the medical staff. And here you get Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer jumping on the president again and calling him incompetent, when the president clearly states, I am very open to alternative strategies. I will take any amount of money that Congress wants to give me. I think we'd like to start with $2.5 billion to fund our efforts to combat the coronavirus. And he takes nothing but political heat from the Democrats. And it just frosts my socks to watch this.
Well, and political heat in the way that they're saying that his response is anemic, that he didn't ask for enough money. Well, Congress, you are the people who give the money, and you can put whatever amount you want. And the president said he will sign it. So I don't know what they're complaining about. It's all about what they want the American people to think. So they have to criticize this president for everything. Listen, these are situations, just like 9/11 was a situation that had never happened before. And presidents, just like you and I, just like every other American, you know, in the country, are just people. Nobody knows everything about everything. So you have to get a group of experts as best that you can and get them to make the best decisions. Now, President Trump has been very clear that what he wants is what is best for the country, and he will do whatever it takes.
Listen, one of the jobs of the President of the United States is to maintain calmness in the face of chaos. And who is creating this chaos is the media. The media is creating the chaos because I think they want to create the exigent circumstances of a huge emergency so that they can put the president down. This is just one more political ploy in the Democrat toolbox that they want to use against this president. The president is trying to put this in perspective. He's not the medical professional. He is the CEO. He basically is taking all of this information from vetted, experienced, well-qualified medical professionals.
Who, by the way, Ron, don't have all the answers either, which is in every country as this spreads across the world. Nobody has the answers. They are searching for the answers. What do you expect from this man?
Well, let's put it in perspective. First of all, it is an exigent circumstance. It is an emergency. It is a pandemic, meaning that it is a virus or a disease. This is a virus that has spread to more than three countries.
Yes.
Okay, we know that. So it already meets the definition for the word pandemic.
Yes.
The issue is, we have a growing pandemic. It's not reducing, and it is serious, and there's exigent circumstances to bring all of the medical and economic resources of the United States to bear. And President Trump was correct in saying, we've got the best in the world. We've got the best experts. We have the best organization. We have the greatest funding in the world. And this is how we've decided, not I've decided, this is how we have mutually decided to take this virus head on. But let's put everything in perspective. And so I have the statistics for influenza and for coronavirus. Now you're hearing every hour, you're hearing an update on statistics for the coronavirus, but let's keep this in perspective. It's a virus just like influenza is a virus. The 2019 to the 2020 statistics as of January of 2019 to January 11th of 2020 is in the United States, influenza has affected 13 million people. Out of the 13 million people, 120,000 were hospitalized. And out of the 13 million and the 120,000 that have been hospitalized, we had 6,600 deaths. That's in that year. The coronavirus, as opposed to 13 million, the coronavirus currently, as of this date, has affected 82,588 people. Totally. Of that number, 46,000, little under 46,500 are active cases. 39,000 of the 82,000 have already been discharged and marked as being recovered. We've got, out of the 82,000 cases and the 46,500 cases that are active cases, 38,000 of those cases are defined or have been diagnosed as being mild cases, and 8,500 have been severe. Okay, that is worldwide in the pandemic. China includes every country that you can think of. But in the United States, we've got about 60 cases. We've got total throughout the United States, right, 330 million people.
Right, most of which came from cruise ships.
Well, let's talk about that. We've got, out of the 60, we've got 39 cases of people that were repatriated into the United States from the cruise ships, and I think a couple from, some people that we brought in also from China.
From China, right.
Which most of those people, I think, were State Department people or whatever, okay? We have 15 new cases. Okay, so out of the repatriated cases, we have 15 new cases and we have zero deaths. Zero deaths at this time compared to 6,600 deaths with influenza, 13 million cases of influenza from 2019 to 2020, and 120,000 hospitalizations. For God's sakes, people, calm the hell down.
I'm not over the top about this yet, but I do see the potential for it being much worse. And there's a new case up in Northern California, San Francisco area.
Well, it's out of UC Davis Medical Center, which is near Sacramento,
where they don't know where that person contracted the disease from. And the other thing that's concerning to me is that one person, not in the U.S., but one person who was said to be cured has it a second time.
Right.
So
that's scary.
It's scary as to if it's sitting in your body somewhere and you think that you're done with it and you're not. I know that, with the flu or with different respiratory things in my life, and I'm sure lots of people's lives, they get it and then they start to get better and then they get worse. So, sure. That seems to be the course of this. The issue is, Ron, we don't know enough about this yet. And all of our medical, and pharmaceutical companies are working overtime trying to get a handle on exactly, what this is, what a vaccine might look like, what might be treatments for it. But the truth is, it's very new. Don't forget, this just came out in early January, and so we don't know enough about it. Is it spreading like wildfire around the world? Yes, that's concerning.
No, and I'm not belittling anything or trying to minimize anything. I'm just trying to put everything in perspective. Okay, and by the way, we've had coronavirus for decades. All right, and there are five different types of coronavirus. Five different types. This one, the current one that we're experiencing, affects both people and animals. All right.
Yes.
But we've had coronaviruses for decades. This one is a new strain of the coronavirus. And so it's worrisome. And I agree with you. One of the things that are worrisome to me is a person that had been quarantined for the 2-week period and had so-called recovered from the coronavirus, then caught it again. So what that teaches us, and it's important, it's an important lesson, is wait a minute, everybody was talking about a 2-week, you know, period.
Incubation period, and it seems to be much longer.
It appears to be at least 28 days, and maybe even longer. And so the people that have so-called recovered and have been released back into the communities, they could still have the disease, and we just don't know that yet. But to politicize something like this is absolutely disgraceful. Now, one of the things that that Schumer was complaining about, and you touched on it, is that Trump came up and he said, look, we're going to start out with $2.5 billion. But I heard him specifically say two things. Number one, we're going to start out with $2.5 billion, but we are willing to spend whatever Congress, which includes all the Democrats, want to spend to combat this virus, because the object of the game is to successfully combat the virus and protect the American people, which is the President of the United States' ultimate responsibility. How can you complain about this president when he's doing every single thing that's humanly possible? Now, another thing is, people in this generation, and this is a very much media-driven generation of instant gratification, okay, entitlement and instant gratification, they want a cure right now. Well, our daughter was formerly a managing microbiologist for a very large pharmaceutical company, and not only is she a lab rat, but she was the state and federal compliance officer. And so that means when the state and federal governments, and she was out in California, which have a huge amount of regulation, she was the compliance officer. So she went with the other lab rats and basically was the oversight person within her pharmaceutical company. And the steps that it takes to meet the oversight and the regulations are absolutely incredible. And so when people say, well, we need a cure right now, and why is it going to take, you know, yesterday we're talking about it could take a year and a half, it could take 2 years.
Well, sure. And those are the first people that would be suing if they come out with a some kind of a medicine that people have a reaction to. I mean, it's a no-win situation for the pharmaceutical company. So they have to take all of the steps to protect the public.
Right. And these are people, by the way, that are working 24/7. They're triple shifting. They're working 24/7. But what you said is absolutely right. The United States of America is such a litigious society that, I mean, they sue people for everything. I mean, come on, watch television and look at some of the commercials of all the law firms jumping on top of the Johnson & Johnson corporation for making baby powder that has allegedly caused cervical cancer in women. Okay, just look at that. Look at all the commercials right now for Roundup, where they are, you know, they successfully sued the company that produces Roundup for over $2 billion. No pharmaceutical company wants to come out with a vaccine where 2 years from now or 3 years from now, they could be sued for billions of dollars and lose everything.
Sure.
Right? So these things take time.
Well, yeah, they should take time. So I want to talk about two different things. First, I want to talk about what's happening with travel and the consequences of the coronavirus worldwide. And then I want to talk about the stock market. So with regular Americans, doing regular daily things, things have changed, right? So what is suffering with this? People are not traveling as they were, and they are not taking plane flights, and they're not going out to eat as much.
They're not staying in hotels.
Not staying in hotels. So all of these businesses are suffering. They are also not going to large events, concerts and things.
Pilgrimage
to Mecca has been postponed, canceled or postponed, and we have the Olympics coming up. So all of these things, I can name just probably hundreds of things that are affected with the way that people are changing their daily lives. And when we talk about just Americans, you and I are like every other American. We have sat down as a couple and said, hey, we have these travel plans upcoming. What are we going to do? Are we going to cancel them now? Are we going to go? Are we, you know, because our travel plans included going to Europe this year, and Italy was one of those stops. And now the virus is in Northern Italy, which is where we were going.
Yeah,
so
you know,
we have to think about those things, as do every other American. What are their plans?
Yeah. You know, I was really looking forward to this year because this was going to be a huge travel year for us. I mean, we travel internationally, but this was going to be a big international travel year. We were going to go to Scotland, and we were going to go to Great Britain. We were going to go to Ireland, which we've never been. And then we were going to, you know, take the train and from Great Britain and go all the way over to Italy. I was going to do a book signing in Florence. I mean, we love Italy, but Italy is one of the countries that the coronavirus has spread to. And we love Florence. That's where we're going to do the book signing, and Verona. And Milan and Venice are a couple of the epicenters for the coronavirus, which is just a couple of hours away from Verona and Florence. So we're going, oh my God, what are we going to do? And we have good friends in Florence that we stay with. And so now we've just had to become very, very flexible with considering whether we're going to travel to Europe or not.
And all of the friends that I'm speaking with are feeling the same way. A lot of people don't want to get on airplanes. A lot of people don't want to go to, say, concerts or plays or things where there's a gathering of people, hockey games, baseball games, football games. People are rethinking their extracurricular activities. You also have to think about people going to work in companies where there are a lot of employees. People are eating out less. So there are a lot of changes that, even though we don't have a huge spread of the virus yet in the United States, I really think that, as they said, it's not a matter of if, but just when. I really think that we will. You know, people are rethinking. So what things have changed in the United States because of that, though? Some of the things that have actually benefited are grocery stores. People are making more food at home rather than going out, so grocery store sales are up. People are getting more takeout food. Domino's Pizza's numbers are up quite a bit. So, you know, some things change one way and some things change another. And then we have the stock market that has really taken a fall.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons that the stock market takes a fall is because, you know, good or bad, the stock market is highly speculative. And don't forget, a lot of the stock market is run on computer analytics that look at things just completely unemotionally, and they project. That's the object of the game, is speculation on the stock market, good or bad, like I said. And right now, it's taken a real dump. And there is no confidence right now, and I totally understand it. There's no confidence right now that we're going to be able to get a handle on this coronavirus. And the reason is because there's just so much that we don't know, and that the medical professionals and the researchers are going to have to determine how is this caused? What strain of coronavirus is this? What is going to be our pharmaceutical impact strategy to this? And then we just finished talking about all the rules and regulations and oversight and how long it takes to get a drug through research to actual production. And it takes a couple of years. And, you know, you and I get a flu shot just like millions and millions of other Americans, we get a flu shot every year. But that flu shot that we're getting, people have to remember, is not this year's strain of flu.
Well, yes, this year it was.
Oh,
this year they did a good job on it.
Okay, but usually my point is, I guess, they're usually a year behind, right?
Sometimes they miss, sure.
Yeah.
Sure, but, you know, so the stock market is having an issue. And, you know, I do want to get into that conversation as well with you, because people need to know why that is. Is it because of President Trump? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with our president. And the, as you said, the politicization of the coronavirus is, it's just, it's unfortunate that people are doing this.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing that I want to talk with you about, especially Linda, because, you know, you do international trade. I want to talk about all the stuff that we get from China.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio. On our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
So, Lynn, as you know, China is a huge trading partner with the United States, and that's why we had this entire tariff war with China and Trump, and there was, again, the politicization of that. And so far, with the new trade deal between the United States and China, the United States was fairly victorious, but that whole paradigm is going to change, I would anticipate. I know you do a tremendous amount of trade with China, so I thought maybe you'd fill us in on what we do with China.
Well, China is responsible for 20% of our gross domestic product here. We import 20%. So we import things like shoes. 70% of our shoes come from China. 40% of our wearables, our clothing, comes from China. So many different electronic pieces and parts come from China.
Now, you know, and I'm glad you're bringing that up, because those little electronic parts seem to infuse everything that's electronic or has anything to do with electronics in the United States. You know, for instance, United States produces more cars than anybody else in the world, and those cars, by and large, are produced in the United States of America. However, a lot of the electronic parts in our vehicles come from China.
Sure.
Right? Same thing with television, same thing with a lot of the things, our computers. And I think Apple does what? Almost all their business in China?
Apple manufactures in China, and they have been at a standstill.
Their phones, at least their iPhones, right?
A lot of these companies are looking at their profits being halved for the year, which is a huge, huge deal. We also have a lot of natural resources that come over from China, ores and different things like that. We also have pharmaceuticals in huge numbers that come over from China.
70% of all our generic drugs are produced in China.
Right. So all of these things are going to be impacted to the world, to the United States, and that's why the stock market is falling, because China doesn't just send all these products to the United States, they send them all over the world. And there are too many different things to count. If you take in all of the raw materials that China sends, so let's just take something like clothing, even though we get 40% of our clothing from there, we get very much of our materials from there that maybe other countries might make. So South Korea might order material from China to make clothing that comes in the United States, but it's still ultimately something coming from China. So much in the United States is going to be affected. And it has taken a huge hit on business in the United States at this point. And I know that when I deal with China, some of my factories after the Chinese holiday have reopened, and some have remained closed because their workers won't come back to work, can't come back to work, whatever the situation is. I understand that President Xi is ordering workers back to work.
But they're not going.
They're not all going. And, you know, it's a problem for everybody. So people need to understand that there is a large impact here.
Okay, so we just finished talking about all the stuff that we get from China, and we're dependent about 20% of our imports are all coming from China. However, does this change the paradigm for China with respect to trade and how the United States views China? What I mean by that is, if I was a business person, just like you are, okay, are you going to start looking at alternate production sources such as South Korea, such as Vietnam, such as Indonesia, such as India? Because, I mean, is it not a buyer's market? In other words, buyers decide where they want to buy goods in the future. And do you not believe that after this situation kind of calms down, hopefully it will calm down, other countries will step forward and become new production giants and partners with buyers such as yourself in the United States?
You know, that could happen, Ron, but in this case, I'm not sure that that would happen. And the reason is that this virus is not contained in China. So when you talk about going to South Korea, South Korea has its own outbreak of coronavirus now, which is expanding exponentially. So it seems like everybody is going to be impacted worldwide by this. Now, it may make U.S. suppliers, or it may make companies like mine look to U.S. suppliers for products rather than Chinese products right now, because a lot of the products that we purchase in the promotional market, even though we might purchase them from a U.S. company, ultimately came from China. So we're going to have to look more and more to U.S. suppliers who can give us products. But I do see a huge impact in the entire marketplace hitting virtually everything in the United States. Healthcare, of course, is up. Grocery stores are up. Fast foods are up, but a lot of things are really, really suffering. Well, we just got news that in Iran, the vice president has contracted coronavirus, and that's on top of their health minister, who also had contracted it. They are having a lot of deaths with the coronavirus in Iran, and I'm not sure what that speaks to other than it probably speaks to that their healthcare system is not great, where in South Korea, they have a really good healthcare system.
Yeah, well, I think the infrastructure of Iran is really sort of in a shambles. I mean, they don't have the medicines, they don't have the hospitals, they don't have the infrastructure, they don't have the organization. There's a tremendous amount of sanctions on them, albeit I don't believe the United States has any humanitarian sanctions on the country of Iran, but that just shows you what happens. And it's a third world country. I mean, let's be honest about it. When you have that type of lack of infrastructure, you're going to see a high death toll. And so I think it's just beginning for Iran. I absolutely agree with you. From everything that I've seen, the country of South Korea has got an excellent healthcare system. Well, let's talk about the healthcare system in the United States of America and compare and contrast what we have right now with what somebody like Bernie Sanders would want to do, who's basically, they call him a socialist. He's a communist Marxist. Okay. He wants the government, and I don't think he would disagree with this. He wants the government to take over all health care. He wants universal health care. And he's pointed to Great Britain, and he's pointed to Canada as being sources of good medical health care. And you and I know that that's not the case at all, because look at all the Canadians that come across the border to the United States to get health care. And what happens, and it's so funny that Bernie Sanders is talking about Canadian health care and how great Canadian health care is, and he's a senior citizen. The guy's 79 years old. When you're in Canada, it's about how old you are and how productive you are for the country as to whether or not you get good medical health care coverage.
They don't even
take care of you. If you're like 79, 80 years old, forget about it. You're not going to get dialysis. You're not getting anything.
I was thinking about that today. I was thinking about that if we had Bernie Sanders' socialistic medicine in this country, then what would happen is, with elderly people, would they be given the medicine for this? Would they be hospitalized? Would they be treated? Or would they just say, well, it's probably about time for you to go, and not treat them? Because it's impossible to treat a pandemic in a country this size. We don't have enough doctors. We don't have enough people to treat this if we become so completely, inundated with coronavirus, and you're on some Medicare for everybody system, they're going to dole out who gets treatment and who doesn't get treatment.
And I think people that don't understand that are absolutely uninformed and naive. Another thing, under the Bernie Sanders proposed medical system, you are not going to have people entering the medical industry, at least not good people entering the medical industry, because they're scared of it. Because doctors go into medicine, and believe me, I've got doctors on my staff, I've been in medical school, taking medical courses, the whole ball of wax. They go into the business of medicine for two reasons. Number one, they want to help people. Number two, they want to make money.
Sure.
Okay, that's why they do it. Okay, and what we're seeing is people are not going into medical school at the numbers that they were before.
And with Bernie Sanders' program, a lot of people who would have been doctors will go into a different field. They will not be going into medicine. These people who are doctors are smart people. They can do more than one thing in life. So they can branch out into a different field as well. I know a doctor who was a doctor who, when Obama changed the system, he left being a physician and he went to work for one of the big tennis shoe companies, making shoes better and more comfortable for athletes, because he's smart and he knows about feet, and he can take his skills and do something else with them besides be a physician.
Well, you brought up an excellent point, and of course, we live part-time in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, which has got American hospitals and American doctors that fled the HMOs when they had that travesty happening with the HMOs years ago. And they said, man, we can take our medical skills and we can go anywhere in the world and become physicians, and we can live remarkably well. And that's exactly what has happened. What is also happening that I see in the United States is doctors are leaving the major hospitals where they're not getting paid enough money, and they're working, tremendous amount of hours, and they're going into concierge medicine. They don't want to be saddled with the poor wages that, like, Medicare and these other governmental programs provide, because there's no money in it for the physician. And there's so much governmental oversight. Look at what happens now, Lyndon. I think we all experience that. All Americans do. There are so many go-betweens.
Yes, so many layers.
Between the physician and your medical insurance, where so many people butting in and making decisions about our medical care that are non-diagnostic and based on economics, right?
Yes.
Based on many things, that has been a horrible system.
Yes. Yeah. We have ruined healthcare, in my opinion, already, and Bernie would ruin it completely. So people should be very afraid of that. Another thing that's really interesting to me is how much foresight President Trump had in building the wall, Ron, because if you look at a pandemic like this and you look at coronavirus, let's say that you have some countries like Nicaragua and
all of them, Honduras, El Salvador, Panama,
Mexico,
you name it.
And if this Ecuador. this virus, say that it gets down in there, they don't have the medical care that we have. So you have these people coming up over the border willy-nilly, and you have the people in the what's the guy's name in Texas?
Beto O'Rourke.
Who wants open borders. You have the Ocasio-Cortez who wants open borders. Let's just let all these people flow over our borders, inundate our healthcare system, pass the virus to everybody.
Contaminate our people.
Exactly. Cause numerous deaths. The wall is needed for things like this, as you know, as well as the crime. There's so many reasons for it, but you can't have people crossing borders like this. It's not safe for so many reasons.
Well, you know, that's exactly right. And it goes back to the law of unintended consequences,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? Where the unintended consequence of an open borders could be a pandemic where people literally make a run on the border,
yes,
and breach our border and infect tens of millions of Americans. So why is the media not capturing that idea and going back to people like Beto O'Rourke or Bernie Sanders, who's recently in Texas, you know, campaigning? And you know, one of the things that really bothered me is he was in South Carolina just the other night, and he had a very big rally. There were a lot of people there. He filled up
President Trump?
No. I'm talking about Bernie Sanders.
Oh, Bernie.
He was in a theater, an auditorium or something, and it was packed. And he's talking about universal health care for illegal aliens, where we're paying for illegal aliens, and the place was cheering. To me, it sent a shiver up my spine, because I, like you, think about the law of unintended consequences. I think about a pandemic. I think about a run on our border. I think about tens of millions of Americans being infected potentially, and us not having the ability under the Bernie Sanders system of taking care of it. And this is what Americans want. They are just so naive. They want something for free. Let me just say this, hon, that they want something for free, and they don't understand the consequences of voting for a person, a Marxist, who sets up a system like this that could really lead to the demise of American citizens.
Well, the Communist Manifesto, one of the first things that you want to do is take over people's health care in order to control them.
Absolutely.
And that is putting us on the road to being a communist country. Who in America wants that? It scares me that so many young people think that they do. They have no idea. Why? Because of our schools.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
What if a new treatment backed by 17,000 scientific articles was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, HealthyCell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit HealthyCell.com/sleep. That's Healthy, HealthyCell.com/sleep.
What you opened with when we started talking this evening is about the politics of the pandemic, right?
Right.
And then you're asking about, you know, why they're doing all these things and why the media is saying things and why they're not bringing up things that are really good things to bring up, as like what President Trump is doing about this and how we're solving. This is a time, Ron, when all of our politicians, Democrat or Republican or whatever they are, should come together on this subject. This is a health subject. This is our health in America. They should not be using this as a political football here. They should be all coming together, giving out the proper information on the media, funding the proper things that need to be funded to protect us all. And instead, they are using it as a way to try to point blame at President Trump again. They're using it in an election year to try to say, okay, he's doing a bad thing for you all and another reason to get rid of him. This should be the furthest thing from their mind, and instead, it's not.
You know, Linda, after we watched the most recent Democratic debate.
Brawl.
Oh, God. that's the word for it. After we watched this, if people, and I'm talking Democrats, if people weren't scared in watching all of those candidates beat each other up on the stage and the way that they did it, just the disrespectful way that they came across and attacked each other, I don't think I've ever seen Bernie Sanders not scream at the podium. And one of the things he was screaming about is that when he was talking, he was hit up on his doubling and tripling down on supporting the Cuban regime and the communist regime there, you know, talking about how good literacy is, right? Oh, you know, Castro fixed literacy with a literacy brigade in Cuba. Yeah, well, guess what? He beat, tortured, and executed thousands and thousands of Cubans. Was that a good thing too? You know what I'm talking about? And he was screaming out into the audience, really, really, when the audience pushed back on that. So it's just crazy Bernie. I don't know if that's what President Trump calls him, but the word out there is that he's a crazy communist. But I just wanted to say this, that ought to scare everybody. You know, that type of rhetoric between all the different candidates ought to scare people. And the thing that ought to scare them as well, especially the Democrats and the Democrat moderates, is there's not a single person there that has a plan to do anything to move this country forward. And they don't acknowledge how much has been accomplished by this administration in only 3 years. So going back on the pandemic politics, can you imagine how this would be dealt with if the Democrats were in office right now?
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, I want to go back to what you said about Bernie and Cuba and Castro with the literacy program. The literacy program perhaps did teach people to read, but it was what he was having them read.
Exactly.
The propaganda.
Exactly. The Communist Manifesto.
Yeah, right. That was the problem. And, you know, Ron, it's the same thing in our country, and that is why this country is even entertaining the idea of having a socialist as a president, is that we have done the same thing in our schools, in that we have allowed the liberals to completely run our schools and teach our kids propaganda, really. They've changed the history books. They've taken subjects out.
There's no civics. There's no government. Right. There's no civics anymore. And so people are ignorant about the United States government, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. They think they're the same thing. People think that they have rights that they don't have. For instance, one of the rights that everybody thinks they have is health care. That's not a right.
It's not
in the Bill of Rights.
No.
The other thing is they don't understand about the three branches of government. They don't understand how governments work. They know nothing of civics. They don't understand the court system, the rule of law, the protectors of the rule of law, of law enforcement. And when you consider the totality of the ignorance, that, and I agree with you, besets the problem that we have right now.
Yes, they have demonized capitalism. And by demonizing capitalism, they have had our students fail to understand that this country in the United States of America has lifted more people out of poverty through capitalism than any country on earth. It's not socialism that lifts you out of poverty. And when you listen to people from other countries, and by the way, our media does a terrible job of not putting people on from other countries that have something to say about what they have experienced in living in socialist countries. They ignore that, and they need not ignore it, because people need to hear how horrible it has been for them.
You know, you're exactly right. And, you know, so right now, I mean, even on CNN, MSNBC, you know, these liberal networks, it's the whole thing about people taking Bernie Sanders on because he's a Marxist, he's a socialist Marxist. Well, if you're gonna be consistent with that, why not do exactly what you're suggesting? Let's have some programming on where they're featuring and interviewing people that came from Venezuela, the people that came from Russia, people that came from the old Soviet Union, from the Eastern Bloc countries, from East Germany, from China.
From Greece, from Venezuela. Venezuela.
And also from North Korea.
Nicaragua.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Let's get some people on, and let's start having those people on a CNN, MSNBC, a panel. Let's get those people on and compare and contrast what their real experiences are with what Bernie Sanders wants, but they don't do it. Okay, the only time that you ever see people that want to talk about what it was like to live in Nicaragua, what it was like to live in Venezuela, what it was like to live in Russia and the Eastern Bloc countries is on Facebook, okay, or LinkedIn, social media, maybe some YouTube stuff, and on Fox News
or
One America News.
Right.
That's the only place you ever see these people.
Right, and that should concern Americans that they are not getting the full facts, because there is a whole other side to this story, and it's a big side. To think that Bernie Sanders could be the president of the United States scares the heck out of me. I mean, this is a guy who would basically destroy everything that we've built in this country. And the truth right now is, with what President Trump has done in lifting Americans out of poverty in his short time in office, it has been just a tremendous effort amongst all races, amongst all economic classes of people, and more in the lower and middle classes than in the upper classes. They have actually profited more.
I think people are blinded about the romanticism of communism.
Kumbaya.
All right. You see people wearing Che Guevara shirts, and they don't even know who Che Guevara was.
Yeah.
Okay, he was a radical communist revolutionary who massacred people in his own nation. Okay, when you see this figure, when you see the pictures of him on the t-shirts that people wear, it looks so romantic, and it was so violent, and he met a violent end that, to be honest with you, he deserved. And so people don't know anything about communism. They don't know anything about Marxism. They don't know anything about socialism. And by the way, Vladimir Lenin said that socialism turns into communism because that's what they want.
Well,
okay,
of course.
The communists always start being socialists. And some of the most violent and restrictive nations in the history of the world have been socialist. National socialism. Hello, the Nazi Party. Fascism. Hello, was socialism. Okay. Take a look at North Korea. Take a look at Ma Sing Tong, right? Take a look at Cambodia. Take a look at Laos. Again, going back over Che Guevara, Nicaragua, Panama. You take a look at all these dictators, these authoritarians. By the way, Bernie Sanders refers to them as authoritarians. They were dictators. Again, every word that comes out of his mouth mitigates the violence and the repression of communism and socialism.
Well, you only really need to go to a country like Hungary, who revels in having a democratic society these days. And they used to not have a democratic society, and they changed over at some point through lots of wars and time. And they got their country back, and they are happy, and they are prosperous, and they don't ever want to go back in that direction. You need to hear from people like that.
And you and I know that, and we're not just pulling that out of the sky. You and I have been to Hungary twice in the last 2 years, and we've spoken with Hungarians.
Yes.
We have personally seen the rebuilding and the vibrance of Hungary. Right. And how happy the people are there now that they truly have a democratic society and they're not being repressed and oppressed by communism.
And they love President Trump. And just as an aside, just as a woman in America, I could not stand to see Bernie Sanders and his angry yelling face every day of my life for the next 4 years. There's nothing presidential about him. He has no understanding of foreign policy. You may say that President Trump didn't either. What President Trump did have is an experience in business that took him to foreign nations to do business, to understand, to be able to deal with big deal makers there. He understands that art of the deal. Bernie understands dictating to you how you're going to live.
You know what Bernie really reminds me of, and I sure wish the people would wake up and see this. He uses the word oligarch. He is the definition of a communist oligarch. What does that mean? That means that they have their rich elite that always protects the Communist Party, right? In every single communist regime in the world, historically, there have always been the rich elite leaders. And then way, way, way down on the socioeconomic rung, we have the people, the workers, as he refers to it. This guy has got at least three houses. He's a multimillionaire. He started out with nothing. All of that money came because of his decades of experience in Congress, in federal politics,
and his wife mismanaging money,
so much fraud. They are the oligarchs.
Yes.
The guy that gets in, he's got the limousine, it gets into the private jet plane, and then talks about, saving the earth, and his carbon footprint is so much bigger than the average American.
Right.
And he's got his rules for his rich elite oligarchy, and then he throws out the scraps, to the workers.
Well, one of his new plans now is to limit what executives can make in their retirement plans from their companies. So the big corporate companies, people that build these companies from nothing. Let's take a Bill Gates who built his company from nothing. Let's take a Steve Wozniak who built Apple computers from
from a garage in Palo Alto.
from the intelligence in his own brain, right? So what you're saying is that the workers, this just sounds like communism to me.
Well, it is communism.
The workers should get the share of that money. And now he wants to limit what you can make in your retirement. However, Bernie and his wife have very nice retirements.
Well, they're all federal.
To the U.S. government.
They're all federal retirements.
Yes.
And people need to remember all these people in the Senate and the Congress, they are self-governing, and they created a system, which definitely needs to go, that they can be in government for 40 years like Bernie Sanders and not have any single piece of meaningful legislation that he developed that was ever passed.
Right.
None of these people.
After you all these years.
You look at the Feinsteins, you look at the Pelosis, you look at the Schumers, you know, look at all of these Democrats, not a single one of them, after being in government for decades, have ever developed a single, not one single piece of meaningful legislation.
And in my opinion, Ron, what Bernie Sanders appeals to is the worst in people. He does not appeal to the best in people. He appeals to the worst in people, the people that want something free, the people that think that they're going to get some government subsidy, they're going to get their health care, they're going to get whatever it is that they think that they're going to get. They're going to take more from the rich and give to them. This never in history has worked, and it's not going to work now. And if you are a person who is on that side of taking, 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 I think people ought to rethink who they are and what their values are in life, instead of being people that are maximizing their potential and giving in life.
If you look back at every single socialist, Marxist, communist government and society, you will always see that every single one of those societies, bar none, zero exception, was always a two-tiered society. The rich elite oligarchy of governing and the workers. And the workers never had full bellies. And that's an important concept to remember. And I would hope that the Democratic voters out there and these people that are supporting Bernie Sanders and people like Bernie Sanders do a little history check, go back at your history, and you will see that without exception, that's the society that was created, and every single one of those societies, bar none, has been a failing society.